came just in time.
What a good song. That's Taylor Sorensen along with Alethea. And you know, we could consider that the first Christmas song of the season here on Broken Road Radio. That's how the song was published and put out. Love Came Just in Time was meant for the Christmas season, but we play it all year round here because it just belongs on the air. Taylor Sorensen and Alethea. 12 minutes after the hour, it is Tuesday morning. That means Dr. Don joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don, a biochemist and a member of the Board of Creation Moments and a vintner. You found this article. This is so amazing because I see this guy's face. I don't know why he pops up on my Facebook page all the time. Does he on yours?
Oh, not necessarily. No, I guess once you search something or find something on the internet, then Facebook steals it and. Then
yeah, that must be it there. And it's always intriguing. He poses all these stuff, and I want to click on him. I said, no, I don't have that kind of time now. So I just got to scroll down. Yeah, but this one was riveting. And it has to do with God and the creation, although he doesn't use the word God, does he, in this one?
Well, yes. I mean, he does, actually. Okay. He does. He claims that... That God actually is a mathematician.
Mm, he talks about the mind of God here, yeah.
And the mind of God, and we believe in cosmic music, but yes.
Well, there's nothing more convincing. Nothing more convincing of the truth of it all than mathematics to me. I didn't go that high. I got to linear algebra and said, "There's no more room for numbers in this head. I'm dropping out now."
And linear algebra.
Yeah, there was a couple steps above calculus, and it described curves, and it talks about infinity and how you can make an airplane on the cycloid curve appear in some other time. And I went, oh, this is too much. In fact, he was Japanese. He was a math professor at UC San Diego my freshman year of college, and it was in a room lined on three sides with blackboards. And we would all sit down, his class would assemble with our notebooks in front of us, and he would start in the upper left-hand corner of the board on the right, and he would just start writing formulas. He wouldn't say a word. He'd write, and you hear this noise on the boards, and he'd go all the way around the left side and then across the front and then back the right side, and he'd say, okay, and that'll be all for today, and we'll see you next time. and I'd go, whoa. This is not my kind of thing. But math itself was so gorgeous, so beautiful, and so precise, and so irrefutable that it alone, I think, establishes the fact that I think he's pretty close. Michio Kaku here, the renowned physicist, saying that God had to be a mathematician. Well, somebody had to invent that thing, don't you think, Don?
Well, mathematics is really just a model, and he actually goes into it a little bit in his little five-minute video that's on this particular web link, but sometimes mathematics pushes physics, and sometimes physics pushes mathematics, mm-hmm. and so there's a kind of hand-in-glove, trade-off between the two, and,
one tends to inspire the other to new heights is the way it works back and forth. They do push each other. You know, some mathematician will come up with a formula, and the physicist will say, whoa, we didn't know that. Let's take a look at that. And then on another occasion, the physicist will do an experiment, make an observation, and say a mathematician says, well, we've got to explain that now. We've got to solve that unknown. And so they lead each other ahead. But there should be, you would think, the same endpoint to this line of thought all along, that somehow somebody, and he comes as close as anybody to saying this is the way it is.
Well, you know, it's it's an interesting thing because mathematics can be just pure abstract. I mean, you can just, start doing things. You don't necessarily have to have something physical to describe or metaphysical for that matter, because once you start getting into the realm of, particle physics and subparticle physics and trying to describe the universe in one unified field theory, for example, you have to kind of imagine, how the universe was put together in the beginning. Now, it always baffles me for example. Are you still there?
Yep, still here.
Okay.
We're doing fine.
Because you froze on my screen here.
Well, it's cold
but
up
anyway,
here.
Anyway, it baffles me that, you know, these folks that both in mathematics and both in particle physics, for example, that's trying to describe the world, that they don't go back to the Bible and read what God said, you know, in his word. If they did, they would see that they're not too far off from what he said in the beginning. And what do we find in the beginning? Well, I mean, if you just read Genesis, you know, chapter 1, you find over and over again that God said. And so that would kind of indicate, at least to me, that the world that we live in is made up of vibrations. And it's not made up of actual particles, for example.
See, it takes a scientist to adopt that perspective, though, because all these years I've heard that. I never took it to that level mentally. God said, I said, okay, he wanted it to be, and so it was. You know, it was kind of a mystical combination between cause and effect. But mathematics explains that.
Well, it does. In the latest, it's not, you know, mathematics and physics is not quite there to be able to say, okay, this one equation describes everything that we can observe in the universe, both on the macro scale and the you know, subatomic the particle scale. So whether you're talking about a black hole, you know, in space, whether you're talking about the fabric of space itself, whether you're talking about how objects fall from a building, as Newton, you know, was trying to describe, it all boils down to this one equation. And these other aspects are just specific derivations from, you know, from this one equation and certain limits that you put on this unified theory. Well, they're trying to get close with this theory called superstring theory. And what makes that a little different than other, let's say, quantum mechanics or quantum particle physics, for example, is that it describes everything as vibrating strings, which, you know, I find quite quite interesting, because that's what God's word says, that things would... That the physics, the world, the physical world that we that, you know, we are made up of, should be made up of vibrations. Because if indeed you take the Bible more literal, let's say, than just this is just a nice story, so that man could understand, you know, Adam could understand what, let's say, God was telling him on how, you know, he created the universe. If you take that, you know, more literal, and God was actually describing exactly how he did it, then you would come to the conclusion that, well, if you finally get to a mathematics that describes things as vibrations, that you would be closer to the truth than if you try to look at, let's say, particle physics as little particles that just happen to be bouncing around, and the speed at which they bounce around happens to determine the temperature. Of course, you know, that's we knew that from thermodynamics, but to go from thermodynamics to actually describing what's inside that little particle and calling it, you know, vibrating strings, for example, is, you know, I think it's beautiful. I think we are finally getting to the point where we can acknowledge the Word of God in conjunction with this, you know, super string theory and the upper mathematics, if you will, or the far reaches of man's thought as you know, with regard to how the universe is put together. Yeah. Now, the unfortunate thing is that these folks that are doing this don't make the link that, hey, the world is created And so we don't have to worry about a Big Bang, for example. We don't have to worry about what happened in the infinitesimal, smallest microseconds or picoseconds after the whole thing exploded, because that's the wrong direction. You know, you should take a look at, and there's two sides even to the origins of the universe. Excluding God, for example, some say, well, the universe has been here and these things just started vibrating, you know, kind of on their own. Others, of course, is the Big Bang, and there's a lot of problems with the Big Bang theory. But if you take the concept, for example, that you have God, as the word says, I mean, he created the space in which he was going to, you know, speak into, then he speaks, then, this, if the space is made up of tiny segments, for example, and we know, physics has known for a while that you can describe things at the quantum level. The reason why it's called quantum, because it's broken up into parts, and it's broken up into maybe equal parts to, if you, you know, get down to the really, really small dimensions. And
we've discovered, in short, that space is really not space. It's full of stuff. I mean, it's almost ironic that we call it space.
Well, there's really two concepts for space. One is the concept that space is void, that there's nothing there, and the matter in space is everything. Then there's this other concept, and that was kind of prevailing. And even Einstein, when he came up with his special relativity, for example, he was thinking that space is void, that there wasn't anything there. And then, thinking about the problem a little bit and thinking about gravity, he said, you know what? Gravity kind of behaves as if space is curved around, is bent, let's say, around heavy objects. So the heavier the objects, the more space is curved around that object. Well, that leads you to the conclusion that there must be a fabric to space, that space must be something. And if you go one step further, as these folks, you know, have done, getting to vibrating strings, for example, I mean, anything vibrating has to vibrate in something. I mean, so it's like you've got a media, and we've got plenty of examples of vibrations in our world, even in our macro world that we live in. I mean, you throw a pebble into water, and you get, you know, these rings, for example, that come out, these shock rings or shock waves, if you will, that come out from the pebble being thrown, you know, in water. And of course, we've got, even as I'm speaking, I'm vibrating the air that, you know, in my lungs and my vocal cords, so that, you know, can cause, you know, sound as we know it. The sound is picked up by what? It's picked up by a microphone that vibrates, and they used to have, you know, crystal microphones, for example. It vibrated a crystal, which generated electrical, frequency that then got amplified and sent out through, you know, the airwaves as a radio wave. Now we do this all digitally through the computer and through advances in electronics. But it's all vibrations, you know, it's all
yeah, vibrations. But to see, it's more than that, because they're intentional vibrations created with a purpose. In your case, it's to communicate with us. How then can you conclude that the creator, an intelligent designer, didn't do this by some plan, which would imply personality, which implies personal characteristics like love and mercy and grace and that kind of thing, intent and planning and forethought, all those things that seem to me go hand in glove with the idea, the very notion of an intelligent creator.
Well, absolutely, and as they even as Miko, you know, describes it. Describes this intelligence in this mathematics that mm-hmm. they're trying to describe the universe with. That, for example, super string theory says that there's all kinds of symmetry. There's symmetry upon symmetry upon symmetry. I mean, we can just look at each other and see that there's symmetry. I mean, there's the right side of you and the left side of you, and the right and left look pretty close. I mean, it's not exact, but it's pretty close. So there's symmetry there. And we look around the world, there's symmetry, you know. So to say that, you know, the world is made up of symmetry and it looks like it's been put together in a very intelligent way, that... you know, there has to be a super, a super intelligence out there that started this. I mean, they are so close to actually saying God created, you know, the universe without actually saying it to put their careers in jeopardy. It's amazing, you know. So,
well, he's got enough of a following that maybe he's safer in saying this kind of thing. I have a question for you. First, I want to read this. This is a statement from Michio Kaku. It says, the final resolution could be that God is a mathematician. The mind of God, we believe, you know, we physicists, of his ilk anyway, is cosmic music. The mind of God, we believe, is cosmic music. The music of strings resonating through, here's where he loses me, 11-dimensional hyperspace. Okay. The question I have for you here is, do we learn more from big things or from little tiny things? Because you mentioned symmetry. There's symmetry from the smallest things we can see or analyze or detect to the largest things we can, isn't there?
Oh, very, yes, very much so. And, I mean, you can, you know, and I think we've talked about this, you know, in previous conversations, but, you know, the symmetry and the mathematics, for example, of the Fibonacci, you know, sequence, mm-hmm. And the golden rule, as it says, you know, as it's kind of called, because you look around and you see this symmetry everywhere, whether it's in the twists in the in a plant stems, for example, even to the flower, to fruit that has little bumps on it, like a pineapple, for example. All of the twisting and everything is described by this Fibonacci sequence. So everywhere you look, you're seeing, you know, symmetry from the smallest to the largest. One would conclude that there must be, there has to be something unifying about it. And that's hence why these physicists, theoretical physicists, for example, and, you know, it's almost like you can't be a physicist anymore unless you're a mathematician first. wrapped up in this idea that there's beauty, there is symmetry, there is even to call God cosmic music, I mean that's essentially still calling God the physical the physical universe, if you will, which is a paganistic idea that, God is in the trees and God is God is in the music of the universe. Well, God's not his concepts, maybe his essence from which, you know, he created his spoken word, certainly is part of the universe. And we have, scripture to support that if God released his hand, for example, from the universe would just fall apart. Which is going to happen.
Well, that's the refutation of deism, isn't it? That there wasn't, in fact, a God who created the universe, but then he turned his back on it. He lost interest. He had no further role and no further part. That ultimately makes no sense to me either.
Well, no, because why create something and then just leave it alone? Mm-hmm. And why create
as if the creative act were enough, as if there was no purpose to the creation.
Yeah, I'm just going to start this clock and let it tick.
Unless maybe self-fulfillment somehow, you know, but that would be an ultimately selfish God. So and not what we see.
And we know from the very beginning that God wanted relationship with his ultimate creation, at least in this physical universe, which was man. And he spent, a lot of time trying to develop this relationship. And even, chapter 2 of Genesis, we learn, for example, that and 3, that God visited Adam and Eve, visited them in the garden, and walked in the cool of the garden with them. So, Adam had a conversation, with God, walking in the cool of the garden. And it was God's desire to continue that relationship. So God didn't just set things in motion and said, have at it, whatever comes of this, I'm not going to touch it. But we have evidence, for example, that God did intervene in man's affairs. And even Benjamin Franklin came to the conclusion that, yes, indeed, God does interfere in the affairs of man. We've got story after story of how God intervened, even George Washington. Having a bullet hole through his jacket, but yet he's not dead during the Civil War. I mean, even as recently, for example, as the 67 war in Israel. Israel should have been wiped out. And you had the Syrian army coming over with thousands of tanks. And you've got this little tank division in Israel that winds up defeating them. I mean, it's just
you read the story of Israel in 1948 and the warfare, that there were miracles after miracle after miracle in that combat. That's an amazing story, too. Getting back to physics and mathematicians, though, they seem to be focused on what can be derived from observations by our four senses, sight, sound, hearing, and all those the five or six senses. But what they don't seem to be able to bridge is the difference between the physical and the spiritual. I'm still waiting for a formula, a mathematical formula, that says there's spirit here. This could have to be an unknown that they haven't solved for yet, because no one has explained that. It's still, even with Michio Kaku's explanation here, it's a physical thing that he's marveling at. And the realm of spirit seems to be beyond their reach.
You would think that imaginary numbers would be able to allow you something, wouldn't you? That's when math stopped making sense to me, when somebody said, this is an imaginary number. Wait a minute.
Got to tell you a story about this. it was a high school math class. I think it was my calculus class, and we were challenged with creating mathematical statements that could not be disproven, that were absolutely true. And my partner and I came up with one. We had creative teams on this. And I came up with one that was only true and irrefutable if it could be demonstrated there was no whole number between 2 and 3. And we could not think of a way to prove that, to establish that. So we went around and we asked all the math teachers in the school, can you guarantee there's no number between 2 and 3? And they'd all say, well, no, I really can't. Talk about imaginary numbers. So that's still an unresolved trauma in my life that sooner or later I'll get around to solving. But yeah, imaginary numbers, it gets pretty theoretical after a while. But I think maybe that's the road to discovering spirit, because it isn't. Do you suppose that spirit could be defined by an equation?
Well, it's even Kaku's statement about the music of strings resonating through 11-dimensional hyperspace. Everybody's familiar with length, width, and height. So that's 3 dimensions. I mean, it's only called 3 dimensions because...
Let me put the question this way. There's a difference between music and sound.
Well, that's true.
And the difference is pretty close to spiritual.
Well, music, for example, is harmonious sound, mm-hmm. right? I mean, yeah. typically. Mm-hmm. There's some things, you know, now that are being called music, which is just pure distortion.
Yeah.
But, you know, classical music, for example, and, you know, was this complicated interlude between, you know, various melodies that happened to meld together into multiple layers of harmonics that, you know,
we often describe such music as inspired, don't we?
Yes, we do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Handel's Messiah is one of the one of the great mm-hmm. representations of that. But yes, to call the cosmic vibrations of or these strings as being music, then implies that there's harmonics and that things build on itself. But more importantly, if it is music, then it's not just random vibrations. It is vibrations intentionally put there by somebody or something. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, you know, if you believe in creation and believe, you know, that God did all of this, then that's where God comes in, because without a creation, you have no God. And God then is the creator. I mean, that's the starting point. You know, a belief in God, that God is the creator of the universe and creator of us. But going back to this 11-dimensional, you know, hyperspace, I mean, it may sound, you know, because of the terminology hyperspace, sounds kind of spooky. But if you take the viewpoint, okay, I can understand, you know, that I've got a dresser in my bedroom, and it's got a length, it's got a height, and I can describe it. It's got a width. And now I've just mathematically placed three dimensions on that, what we call three-dimensional object. Now, if you extend it one more dimension, which Einstein did, and was one of his greatest contributions to physics, was to say that, you know, hey, folks, you know, time is also part of the space that we live in. So if you include time in your the mathematical formulas, now you've got four dimensions to space. By keep extending that, you add certain properties to space that you didn't realize was there, you know, from the beginning. And I'd like to think that perhaps space, the total universe, including even the term universe, is kind of limiting, because it doesn't include this the spiritual aspect that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do anything in your space, you have to be outside that which you are building. For example, you can't be inside. I mean, you can be inside the car to put up the you know, the roof and things like that. But, I mean, you know, that's not what I'm talking about. You got to be outside the material that you're working with in order to build something. So from that perspective, that simplified perspective, God has to be outside this 11-dimensional space. Now, isn't it interesting that Israel, that God told, you know, that there were 12 tribes to Israel? And as we get into Revelation, we know that there are 24 elders, for example, around the throne. So that, to me, is a key to potentially how many ultimate dimensions that we have. That includes our domain, which is the 10 or 11, you know, dimensions that, you know, physicists are trying to deal with now. But these other dimensions in which God in the spirit realm, reside.
Well, are you implying that spirit itself would be a dimension? And that if everything physical derives from the spiritual, that would imply a hierarchy of dimensions, with spirit being the topmost.
Well, it's a different realm. I mean, if you will, mm-hmm. Obviously we know that the spirit realm can interact with our realm. So that tells me that those dimensions, if you will, that represent the spirit side of things must be connected, and God has to have this connection with the physical realm that he created so that he can interact with it. And we ourselves, can interact with God, and God purposely put something different in us than he did from the animals. Is that our spirit is the essence, if you will, of our being that actually interacts with God.
Well, it's the link, it's the commonality.
It's the commonality, and it's the our spirits aren't confined necessarily. I mean, they are now, because we can't tell our spirit to go ahead and go like Jesus could, ultimately on the cross when he gave up the ghost, as it's described. But our spirits then can interact in the spirit realm with the spirit of God. And of course it can interact with the demonic spirits as well. Mm-hmm. And so we get communication from not only from God, but from the angels and from...
There's another indication of symmetry, isn't it? There's positive and negative, there's good and there's evil. There's an equal and opposite reaction to every action in the basic physics.
Right.
Newtonian physics.
But, but now you kind of, you can be bordering on implying that God created evil.
Yeah, well, that was not what I was saying. But,
right,
but
I know.
those are of the spiritual realm, which we have yet to really define or discover in such a way that we can take a picture of it, or that we can write it down in a mathematical formula. There's yet another aspect of this that intrigues me, and that is, if God has a plan and a purpose, then he has created a story. And it's not a story unless there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. That is, a resolution to the story, the last page. And all that seems indispensable to the creation, that there must be a beginning, middle, and an end. What do you think?
Well, and that's what the 66 books of the Bible is all about. is that story of, it starts with how we were created, and it ends with spending eternity with God in his domain, being in his presence. And of course there's this intermediate period called the millennial, thousand-year reign of Jesus here on this earth. But then after that, the physical realm, if you will, gets wrapped up. And then there's a new heaven and a new earth, of course, which we get to spend, like I said, eternity in the New Jerusalem. So it's interesting that God loved us so much that he didn't leave out any details. Mm-hmm. We can wonder, well, what is to come, but he's told us what is to come. And for those who are interested in what he doesn't leave us guessing, if you will. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of parts of Revelation that it is a little fuzzy, but it's you can't read Revelation without reading the whole Bible, actually. But if you start to piece things together, when you see events coming, one of the purposes of Revelation is, when you see events coming, that you're not surprised. Mm-hmm. And you say, oh, okay, that's what was meant by that particular scripture in Revelation, or a cluster of scriptures that talks about various things.
We got quite a string of comments from SAS here, one of our listeners, and says, wow, Dr. Don just clarified the idea that the universe is vibrations, because that is what sound is, and that is what God did. He spoke. The guy is right on the ball. Hey, Don, you got a fan out there. Said, we need Dr. Don on more often. Bring some clarity to what David and I have to discuss here. Yeah. The real scientists, not the ones who push evolution, lack faith. To them, all things must be experimentally proven. This is a definitive lack of faith. The ones with faith, well, I won't go on there. He calls them a bad name. Says they're jerks. The faith that they might do or have must, in these days, be kept secret, like the Muranos and the Inquisition period, Spain and Italy. You know, it goes a lot of depth to SAS's comments here. But he asked the question a few minutes ago. So God created Satan for the interest of symmetry? That was probably a response to what I said. And Don, you've fully explained that, I think. And interesting discussion today. It's led us, as it always does, along numerous rabbit trails. Dr. Don Clark is a biochemist and a member of the board at Creation Moments. I want to suggest that maybe you visit the Creation Moments website. It's creationmoments.com. And there is a whole lot of stuff there, videos and DVDs and essays and books and information that speaks to the science of young earth creationism, or biblical creationism at least. And you'll find it fascinating and persuasive. And you owe yourself to visit that website, take a look at what's there, creationmoments.com. You can link to it from brokenroadradio.com, where you're probably listening this morning. Don, as always, and I could say, well, Don, let's wrap this up, but I don't.
Is there a wrap up?
I think we have.
I don't know if we can wrap it all up.
I think we'll just have to have you on every morning, you know. Yeah, so see you tomorrow.
We'll see you next week, Don. And in between here is Thanksgiving and the beginning of the holiday season. Have a great Thanksgiving with your family, and have a nice glass of wine for us, okay?
Okay, we'll do. Very good, folks.
See you next
Happy
week.
Thanksgiving, Don.
Bye-bye.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, folks.